10. The West Hawaii Criminal Investigation Section was on a side road off the coast highway in the flat lowland country between Kona and the airport. Its neighborhood was, to put it mildly, unprepossessing. The idea, it seemed, had been to gather up most of the necessary but unlovely community services and deposit them in one out-of-the-way place, where they would be least likely to offend the eyes, ears, and noses of the sensitive. The garbage dump, with its huge, surreal pile of wrecked cars waiting to be compacted, the Humane Society holding pens, and the West Hawaii CIS, which doubled as the Kona police station. A trailer and heavy equipment repair yard and two huge, steaming piles of organic waste rounded out the complex, adding their own distinctive touches. But the police building itself was reassuring, a modern white one-story structure, clean and well-maintained, on its own little island of concrete walkways and decorative plantings. And it was open. Even better, the detective they were sent to when John said they wanted to talk about the Torkelson case turned out to be an old acquaintance. Detective Sergeant Ted Fukita had been a new sergeant in the Honolulu Police Department when John was a young cop there, and he remembered him.
"How could I forget you, Lau?" Fukita said, extending his hand.
He was a waspish man in his 50s, who looked as if he was fighting a low-grade toothache.
"You're the guy who couldn't fill out an expense form right if his life depended on it. So how are you getting along with the Phoebes?"
"Still can't fill out the forms right," John said. "Other than that, okay."
"Good, good. So what can I do for you? Please tell me this is not official fee business."
He was a study in restlessness. Flip, talky, and fidgety. At the moment, he was cracking gum between his teeth, bobbing back and forward in his swivel chair, and jiggling a toe against the plastic carpet protector underneath him.
"No, actually, it's old CIS business," John told him.
Fukita, they quickly learned, had not been the original case handler. When the detective who had run the investigation had retired not long after the active phase was over, the case had been given to Fukita to oversee, more or less a pro forma gesture, inasmuch as unresolved homicide cases, while they might well go dormant, were never formally closed. There had been little to oversee, but the workman like Fukita had familiarized himself with the case file, which meant that it wasn't necessary to spend a lot of time bringing him up to snuff. More important, from Gideon's point of view, since it hadn't been Fukita's case during the investigative phase, he had nothing to be self-protective about. Which didn't mean that he was going to sit there and accept everything he was told, certainly not on the strength of Gideon's supposed reputation. When John had somewhat effusively introduced Gideon as the world-famous skeleton detective, his response had been a laconic, gum-cracking,
"Yeah, I think I might have heard of him."
Indeed, when Gideon began by stating, maybe a bit too baldly, that the skeleton in the Grumman was not that of Magnus Torkelson, but of his supposedly murdered brother Torkel, Fukita had interrupted before Gideon had gotten out his first complete sentence.
"What? You're out of your mind. What is this supposed to be, a joke? We had an autopsy, we took depositions, we had a... How the hell did you come up with a royally screwed-up story like that?"
"There was a royal screw-up, all right," John told him levelly. "But you guys made it."
Fukita's head rolled back and forth, and then round and round on his neck. Gideon caught a waft of spearmint.
"All I can say is, you two better have a good reason for wasting my time."
"It's all yours, Doc," John said. "Just wait, Teddy. You love this. This is great."
"Thanks a lot, John," Gideon thought.
"Oomph,"
Fukita said, his eyes closed, continuing to stretch his neck muscles. Gideon was generally good at telling when a cop was going to be open-minded about what forensic anthropology could do and when he was going to dig in his heels and resist. And Fukita didn't strike him as a promising student. Happily, however, the sergeant proved him wrong.
although he was anything but an easy sell. With the foot bones laid out and their anatomical relationship on his desk blotter, he had put Gideon through a detailed show-and-tell drill, interrupting with questions and argument, until he had more or less satisfied himself that the old talus fractures were really there, and they meant what Gideon said they did. By the time they were through with it, he seemed a happier, more engaged man, his toothache perhaps gone.
"Okay, I'll buy it," he said, handing the talus back to Gideon, who wrapped it in a Kleenex from Fukita's desk and put it in the box. "I like that, and I like the age stuff. It's interesting. But you want to know what I don't get? I don't get why this has to be Torkoal. Why isn't it Magnus? They both rode horses, right? They were both the same age, right? As far as I can see, it could be either one of them, or am I missing something?"
"Yeah, you're missing something," John said. "Maybe if you'd shut up for 1 minute, Doc here could get to it. You sure haven't changed, Teddy."
Gideon expected Fukita to flare up at that, but he laughed instead, a not unfriendly noise somewhere between a snuffle and a one-note giggle.
"Okay, Doc, get to it. I'll try and be quiet, but that's not a promise."
"It's the toes," Gideon said. "The toes are the clincher."
He pointed to the foot.
"The two that go here are missing, the distal phalanges of the second and third toes. They were amputated decades ago, the result of an accident that Torkoal had 40 years ago. Magnus didn't have any missing toes."
Fukita stared at the remaining bones. He was frowning and working his lips. He seemed surprisingly disturbed. The gears spinning in his mind seemed just short of audible. The silence, the low hum of conversations drifted from the other cubicles.
"You're sure you never saw his face?" a detective asked kindly. "You wouldn't recognize him if you saw him again?"
"Okay, how do we know the toes just didn't get lost after he died? Like just about every other damn bone in his body?" Fukita finally demanded. "What makes you so sure they were amputated?"
"Because," Gideon began.
"Because," John cut in, "when the distal phalanges and a segment of the middle phalanges are removed, the bone that's left, that is, the proximal segments of the middle phalanges undergoes, osteoporotic atrophy and becomes resorbed." He gestured at the bones.
"I mean," he said blandly, "it's obvious, really."
"Yes, it seems that way to me, too," Gideon said, suppressing his smile.
"I'll be damned." Fukita wasn't looking at the bones. He was rocking lightly back and forth in his tilting chair,
looking through a window behind them at the compost piles and snapping a rubber band that was around his wrist. The look on his face was part befuddlement, part amusement.
"And so that's how you identified him as Torkoal. That's the whole bit?"
"That was the main thing, yes," Gideon said. "There were some other things, but..."
"Why? What's the matter? Is there something funny about it?"
"Oh, yeah. Hilarious."
He stopped rocking, gave the rubber band one more vigorous snap, and looked directly at Gideon.
"The corpse in the burned building, that's how they identified him as Torkoal. Otherwise, he was unrecognizable."
"I don't understand."
"He was missing two toes, too. The same two frigging toes, I'm pretty sure."
"But Magnus didn't. But Torkoal was the one."
"Right you are, champ," said Fukita. "And what does that tell us, I asks myself? It tells us, I replies, that we got ourselves one too many Torkoals."
"And not enough Magnuses," said John after a moment.
He rolled his head back, working his neck muscles the way Fukita had.
"I could sure use a cup of coffee."
In the snack room, over cardboard cups of watery vending machine coffee.
"Can you believe it?" Fukita said sourly. "Here we are in the middle of the goddamn Kona Coast, and this is the crap they expect us to drink."
They talked about what was to be done, and agreed that the place to begin would be to do what Gideon had come for, to look at the case's medical records to see what he could make of them.
"Okay, but between us,"
Fukita told them. The guy who did the autopsy, old Doc Micklejohn, he'd been having a serious affair with the bottle for a while, so by that time he was maybe, let's say, a couple of tacos short of a combination plate, you know? What I'm saying is, those two missing toes might have been in his head. I mean, considering the fire and all, the body was in pretty bad shape. Could have just been sloppy work. Or maybe the toes got burned off. But those exact two toes, John said, the same ones Torkel was missing? How likely is that? Not very, Fukita admitted. But then the autopsy wasn't performed for a couple of days. By that time, they had the old lady's deposition, and everybody, including Micklejohn, knew, well, they thought they knew, that it was Torkel. For all I know, he also knew Torkel was missing a couple of toes. He probably did. So, I mean, when you consider the condition of the body and the fact that Micklejohn wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer... He jumped to the wrong conclusion, John finished for him. He expected amputated toes, and so that's what he found. Yeah, Doc says that happens to him all the time. John, when did I ever say... Gideon began, then laughed. Never mind. Wouldn't surprise me, Johnny, Fukita said. But if you want to know what I think we got ourselves a whole nother scenario. Which is? John asked. That Torkel Torkelson, the real Torkel, cut those two toes off his dead brother before he took off so that everybody would think he was the dead one, and the shooters would forget all about him. Yes, we were thinking along the same lines, said Gideon. One thing, though, John said. How do we know for sure that the guy you autopsied is really his brother Magnus? Okay, it's not Torkel. Torkel was in the plane, we agree on that. But this guy here could be just about anybody, couldn't it? I mean, he was unrecognizable, right? Real doubtful sport, Fukita said. Who else could it be? That was the last night anybody ever saw old Magnus alive. He sure hasn't been around since, and we don't have anybody else who's missing from then. No, I think we can be sure it's Magnus, all right. Yeah, like until 20 minutes ago you were sure it was Torkel. Fukita scowled. Wise guy. That was because... Let's not get ahead of ourselves, Gideon interjected. That's what I'm here to try and clear up. If there are any clear photos of the foot, and there's not too much damage from the fire, I might be able to tell for sure that the toes were lost after he died. That'd give us a starting point. And who knows? Maybe I might come up with something else. Okay, Chief, Fukita agreed with a shrug. Do your shtick. What do you need? Any pictures you have, the crime scene photos, the pre-autopsy photos, and the photographs from the autopsy itself, if there are any. No problem, Fukita said. And I probably should look at the autopsy report itself, even if you think it's suspect. The coroner might have noticed something helpful. I wouldn't count on it. He stood up and poured most of his coffee into the sink. Look, I have to run into Kona for a while, but I'll set you guys up in a quiet room and have Sarah bring it all over to you. How about sending the whole case file while you're at it? John said. I wouldn't mind looking through it. You're talking about a lot of paper, John shrugged. It'll give me something to do. Okay, but I can't let you guys take anything away with you. You understand that. It all has to stay here. No problem, John said. 15 minutes later, with Gideon and John deposited in a pleasant conference room with comfortable faux-leather chairs, a dark, gleaming table, and windows whose views artfully managed to avoid the compost heaps and wrecked cars, instead looking over the lava fields, past the Boeing 717s floating down to the nearby airport, and onto the massive, cloud-wreathed hump that was Maui. An affable, carrot-topped clerk lugged in a rolling cart bulging with hanging folders and set it next to the table, between their chairs. A thick, yellow 9x12 clasp envelope was plopped on the table as well. There you are, boys. The case files and the folders. The envelope has the crime scene photos. If you need anything else, pick up that phone and dial 44. I'm Sarah Anderson. Is the autopsy report in with the case file? Gideon asked.
No, it wouldn't be in there. His Majesty didn't tell me you wanted it. Be back in a sec.
In the envelope was a stack of black and white 8x10 photos and a neatly printed log numbering and describing them, 165 in all, as usual, starting with the exterior of the building and working inward, gradually going from long and intermediate range shots to close-ups. Gideon was at the 130th before he got to the first relatively close full-length image of the body, which had been found lying half on its side, half on its face. It made him close his eyes.